Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, and I represent the political center and have on the political left, Shireen Gourbani. Hi, Shireen.
Hi, how you doing?
I am doing great and so excited to welcome again Senator Dan McKay. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Natalie. Hey, Shireen. And our friend Anthony, who stays silent.
Hello.
We have a lot going on in the world. We've got COVID exploding in Asia, India. My goodness, Dan, you've spent time there. That country is in a world of hurt right now. And then we've got Israel and Palestine, shooting missiles at each other. It's unsettling even as we come out of this crisis, Dan.
Yeah, you know, I think it is going to be quite the surprise that everybody hoped that we would come out of the pandemic and all the lessons learned and that the world would be a wiser, better place. And unfortunately, it seems that, you know, as we're coming out of the pandemic, that our old problems are our same new problems. And we're going to have to kind of get back to work on solving some of those bigger issues.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment, Dan. And Shireen, I've been telling people, you know, in the post-pandemic world, some things go right back to where they were, some things have been accelerated, and then some things are new altogether.
Yeah, I think we're at a real, especially the current situation in Israel, is at a boiling point, I mean, beyond. I think one of the things I keep thinking about is as much as you could be the most powerful person in the world. You could be Joe Biden, but you don't get to pick what's happening around the world. And just to think about all of these challenges on a global scale, whether it's the COVID cases in India that continue to be truly alarming or, accelerating violence between Israel and Palestine, there's a lot going on that's going to be very difficult to address.
Yeah. Dan and Shireen, when you staff a governor for as long as I was involved, you are exposed to a lot of things. And one of the fond memories I have is meeting Benjamin Netanyahu in Beverly Hills right before the Olympic Games. We had a torch relay reception there for Utah, and I was down there. And Netanyahu was not in office at the time, but Governor Leavitt did meet with him. It was after 9/11 in that window, so a very tense time in our world. But I remember Bibi, as they call him, turning to Governor Leavitt and saying, "America loves a glorious war." And it just reminds me of the hawkish nature of this man.
Well, and you have to look at, I mean, unfortunately, the history with the Israelis and the Palestinians goes back a long way. And solving it is not going to be an overnight issue. It is an on and off peace trial, I say, where they try it out for a little while and then there's constant, you know, fights. And this is, boy, it really is tragic when you look at the after effects of, you know, the bombs and missiles and everything else being launched. This really is tragic. And I'm telling you, the worst part is it's going to test the U.S. alliances in the region and trying to figure out how the Biden administration maneuvers those alliances is going to be very interesting to watch.
Right. Well, and then we come to our own shores or to our own borders and see what's happening at the Mexican border, where we're hearing a reporting of about 21,000 migrant children in crowded facilities with no oversight. I think there's a press-free zone, so we don't really know what's going on. We've had some reports of it, but Shireen, this is not a problem that President Biden wanted to have.
No, and to be absolutely clear, I had a lot of criticisms of the Trump administration and the way that individuals are being treated at our borders. I have the same criticisms of the Biden administration. I am very worried about the conditions that children are being kept in, and I do think that we need to find some big solutions to these problems quickly. Just the inhumanity of it is truly just sickening to me, and we have to be able to find solutions.
Dan, there's a
time.
Go ahead.
I am going to just, like, hold Shireen a little bit accountable. I love her, but
Did I just say I have the same problem with the Biden administration?
It's not even close, though. Remember, you lost your mind over Donald Trump's treatment of 445 migrant children who couldn't find their parents. And nobody bought into the, quote, Trump lie that parents were dropping their children off at the border without the parents going with them. And here we now have a situation where we are at 20,000. And I think what people recognize is there are conditions in that are south of the border. And that doesn't mean just Mexico, right? You can go all the way down Central and South America and realize that there are conditions in those countries that have problems. And parents are dropping them off. But the idea that, you know, 2 years ago or even a year ago, everyone was ready to impeach Donald Trump over the treatment of Mexican children at the U.S.-Mexico border that have been dropped without parents.
So they're largely
and
not
all
Mexican
we've done
children.
Is we've opened up the borders. No, you're right. They are largely not Mexican children, but we have opened the borders and we have said, come. And now we don't have just a small 445 children problem. We're at 20,000. And this number just continues
to grow. Okay, so you're misquoting those numbers, first of all. And I also think it's important, Dan, really, that this kind of outrage, I appreciate that that's kind of the thing that's happening on the right now. But when we talk about the overall problem, the 400 children, there was an entire family separation policy that was enacted by the Trump administration. These are problems that are beyond a party. And the issue is, I think, for me, that right now we have a Congress that is completely unwilling. We also have a President Biden who has said repeatedly, these are not open borders. Do not come. Do not send your children. If you choose not to hear that, that's on you.
A family separation policy is ridiculous when it was enacted by President Obama and the Trump administration continued through with it and then, you know, eventually ended it. That part is completely forgotten. But I will go to the next level and just say we have a broken border problem.
Yes.
And the idea that the Biden administration said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to stop all the spending on the wall and we're a closed border. Trust us. I'm telling you, that is going to be a complete human relations, or sorry, a human, environment
catastrophe
disaster.
Is what it is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm. And it's only going to get worse unless the Democrats get tough.
So in the middle, I'm just going to say that I don't like being so political about it. I like to be more pragmatic about what are we going to do. And I like the notion that we're a nation of immigrant, but we're also a nation of laws. And we have to have both exist at the same time. Dan, a question for you. What happened to the third country asylum rule? Did it go away under Biden? Because that seemed like a really smart thing to me, that if you're coming for asylum, the first country you hit is where you get your asylum.
And Trump really doubled down on that policy, trying to keep people in, and actually provided, you know, aid to those countries specifically focused on that third. But again, that was all lost in the talking points. And I agree with you. This should not be a political problem, but it is because of one, inaction, and two, everybody in D.C. has dirty hands when it comes to this, and they do not want to deal with solutions. They really don't. And anybody that tries to tell you different, Republican or Democrat, is selling you a bill of goods.
Hey, let me make a census 2020 connection, because I can always make a census connection. But if we look at U.S. growth rates in the past decade, it's the second smallest or lowest, slowest growth we've had in our nation's history. Second slowest.
And yet, as a state, we have the highest.
Yeah. Utah, but I'm speaking nationally to just make the point that when you have an aging population and low population growth, not helpful. And it's a type of demographic decline. And another way of saying it is we need immigrants. We need them as workers. We need them as consumers. We need them part of our system to help pay for our seniors as they age.
Yeah.
Hey, let's go to another one that doesn't get any easier. Liz Cheney. She gave her speech before her ouster. It was a very moving speech. I thought so. Dan, I can't imagine you didn't listen to it and think it wasn't heartfelt and authentic. You know, I mean, maybe you disagree with her, or you agree with her, but don't think she should be in leadership with those ideas. But she got ousted. Shireen?
Yeah, I guess I'm sitting here thinking Liz Cheney now has one of the most powerful voices in the Republican Party in the country. So I'm curious about the overall strategy.
From the smallest state in the country.
And I'm curious about the overall strategy there. But I think a lot of people who are in the middle politically, who lean right, are probably grateful to have that sort of safe harbor out there. Somebody who is unwilling to deny that Joe Biden won this election. A person who's not interested in trafficking and the kind of really some of the bizarre narratives that are playing out in kind of the far right of the Republican Party. And I think the fact that this has happened is going to be a real a turning tide and an opportunity to see if the Republicans are able to be a party of ideas or just continue to traffic in conspiracy theories.
Dan, what did you think of Senator Romney's quote? I thought it was really clever, but he basically said that ousting her won't gain the GOP one additional voter, but it will cost us quite a few.
Yeah, and that's very possible. And, you know, I'm kind of getting tired of Senator Romney dancing on the coffins of whatever he stands on. What I'll say is that, you know, from an insider's perspective, right, and I can only say this from a House member or a Senate member at the Utah level, right, your leadership, their job is really to represent the caucus, right? They're platformed, right, or they're put up on a platform and on a pedestal on leadership because they have the support of the caucus, right? And everybody kind of, you know, trust their leadership in negotiations or whatever it might be. But when, you know, and truth to power, I take nothing away from Liz Cheney's truth to power position. Like, I totally get it. And you have to decide what hill you're willing to charge. And Liz chose this hill. And maybe it's a laudable hill, right? And I think history will probably look kindly on what she's saying. That said, it's difficult to be the leader of a caucus and be outside of where your caucus wants you to be. And that's why she lost the leadership position. But leadership is really, like, there's two parts of it, right? You can have leadership as a title, or you can have leadership that's consistent and you're able to sleep at night. I like the second option more than I care about the first.
Shireen, we'll give you the last word, but I'll just say, if I'm going to die on a hill, I'd like it to be the peaceful transition of power in American democracy.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good hill. I'll also just point out that our freshman representative, Blake Moore, is one that did vote to keep her, and that the rest of our representatives were happy to go along with what is, I think, a further radicalization of the Republican Party.
It just shows you that a freshman just doesn't get leadership in anybody. Bless Blake's heart.
Or maybe he has integrity.
Love where he's coming from.
Yeah, Dan.
It might not have anything to do with that. It might not.
I'm going to give him credit. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center with Shireen Gorbani and Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and I want to talk about inflation and the economy and jobs. It's such an interesting time. We're coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic, the public health recession, and it looks like GDP in our country is going to grow at about 7%, just maybe over 7%. And on an annualized basis, that would be the second fastest growth we've seen since 1955. But Shireen and Dan, it comes with growing pains. And Shireen, you want to talk about employment.
I do. So I know that this was a disappointing jobs report. And I think it's sometimes a little bit confusing for people to really understand what they're looking at. So I'm wondering if I can maybe just have you talk a little bit about, you know, if you were advising the president, what would you be noticing? What would you be looking for? How do you take one jobs report, put it in context?
Yeah. Well, it's always a moving picture, right? You don't like snapshots. You want to look at a movie. And we had a great jobs report, and then we had a not so great jobs report. And what you're always doing is dissecting it to figure out, was it weather induced? You know, was it is it real or is it temporary? And, you know, I think right now what we're seeing is something that we've not really witnessed before. We're coming back from a shock, and it's incredibly unpredictable, volatile, disruptive, and especially, and Dan, this will get us to the inflation question, when we've got so many supply constraints that are adding to increases in prices that make it very difficult to plan and make decisions. And I think of our, you know, home builders in Utah that are faced such incredible increases in prices. How about our car dealerships that have these microchips that are embedded into cars that affect prices of motor vehicles or even access or supply of motor vehicles? So we've got our hands full, even as it's better news than we've had.
Can I just add a state perspective to that as well? Imagine if you have done some preliminary estimates on a roadway and you think it's going to be a $50 million road, and concrete increases, you know, and you see a 200% increase in concrete, right? And a scarcity of availability. What you then have is a formula for a massive escalation in price of these transportation projects that we currently have budgeted for and yet may not end up having the money to complete the projects.
Yeah. Well, so Shireen, in your question, what I would be telling an elected leader is to look at many measures, and all of these measures would show that we're improving. And then to Dan's point, if, you know, on a state perspective, Utah is an outlier. We're one of only two states that are, you know, have increases right now, like year over increase in jobs. And it's put us in quite a tricky situation because the Fed's sending us a lot of money. And while we can use it, it's hard to spend it wisely, Dan.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, this dovetails right into a federal stimulus package that is, you know, intended to support infrastructure, which we have as a state, you know, with a 4-year running surplus that we have invested in infrastructure and some of those other costs, while other states were, you know, using it for filling other holes in their budget. And now we have received $1.6 billion for infrastructure that, by the way, we can't use on roads. So we were talking about the cost of roads and those kinds of things increasing as a result of inflationary measures and supply issues. So now you have $1.6 billion flowing into the state, and you're going to have an interesting way to spend it, because this is a once in a lifetime cash infusion for infrastructure. I will just say, it will just be an interesting list of what actually gets funded.
And Shireen, it becomes very inflationary, right? Because you go spend on the things that are already shortages, and and prices spike. I heard the speaker sharing with a group of business leaders his thoughts on this. He talked about $1.6 billion in stimulus, another $2 billion coming for infrastructure. That's the guess. That may require a $600 million match, by the way, something good to know. And then the notion that there will also be more entitlement money coming in the $5 to $6 billion range. This will be two payments to individuals and the like. But this is what we talked about on the show last time, a brand new definition of federal government's role in our world and in the economy.
Yeah, and I hope the opportunity is taken to be really, you know, strategic and thoughtful in terms of investing in our people and the places where we really lack. Because I understand what you're saying, Dan, in terms of the state having made, you know, investments in infrastructure. But I think you might know even better than I do that in your corner of the valley, there's a real sense of discontent with the level of investment in infrastructure. So we know that there are still needs, and that there is a way that this can be done that really does improve the lives of day-to-day people living here in this county and in this state. You know, I think now is a good time for listeners. If you've got thoughts about where you'd like to see investments, send an email to your legislator. Get in contact with them now, because these decisions are going to be made here in short order.
Let me give a perspective, and Dan, then I'll go to you. But what you're going to see is a legislature that holds on to money. They're not going to spend it till they have more information. And the quote I heard the speaker say is, on very consequential decisions that are irreversible, make the decision slowly. Is that what you're hearing from your caucus, Dan?
Yeah, that's absolutely probably the most wise way to look at some of this. Well, for example, on the money that we are now being appropriated, the $1.6 billion that are focused on, you know, specifically water conservation measures, you know, those kinds of infrastructure projects, which are all very laudable. And, you know, we definitely want to be working on those components. The interesting part in that, though, is the rules just came out, like the first draft of the rules just came out, like, you know, 2 days ago. And we're all kind of now being circulated with some guidelines. And there's some, you know, hidden clauses in that thing that we are going to have to kind of dig through. And to the speaker's point, it's just going to be smart for us to be slow.
And this is the point where, because Utah's an outlier, the way they write those rules for most states, it's not a great fit in our state, and it makes it more difficult for us to do right by those numbers. Pretty interesting. Well, I want to talk about some other things. We have a governor that has issued an executive order prohibiting state agencies from watering during the hottest times of the day. That makes sense. We're in a drought, but they're talking about it being the worst on record, Shireen.
Yeah, the water situation is grim. And I would encourage people to really look to your municipal government, look at opportunities or ways that you can participate and help. But we statewide really could do a lot better when it comes to our water consumption. We're very high water usage individuals here in Utah. And there's a lot that people can do in this space.
Yeah. Dan, lots of money, not lots of water.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I wish we could change the two.
We also have these mask mandates starting to be lifted, right? I mean, our state measures. I'm a big soccer fan. Real Salt Lake, Rio Tinto's not requiring masks this weekend. They're recommended, but not required. I was at Fashion Place Mall the other day. New sign up. Masks recommended, right? Mm. It doesn't say required. Dan, what's the feeling in the McKay household?
Well, you know, we have... It's interesting. The McKay household is somewhat divided on how we ought to deal with this. Some of these things, my kids were ready to protest and you know, go to school without masks and dare to be thrown out. And, you know, that was an interesting conversation about, you know, civil conversations and civil disobedience and a good. So it's interesting that you brought in the McKay house. You always do these weird twists in your questions, Natalie. I think it's like going to be, what's your feeling? And then you throw in the house and I'm like, boy, I really don't know what to say there. But I can say we were recently in Washington County and down in the southern part of the state. And literally it feels like COVID was an ancient memory down in Washington County.
Interesting. I should ask how it is in the Gorbani household, Shireen.
So it's pretty chill up here. We were lucky in that because my husband is a teacher, he was vaccinated early. I've been a volunteer with the response and was also vaccinated pretty early. And I signed my family up for a study. So I have a six-year-old and every week he volunteers to get tested just like the rest of us do. So we have a pretty good handle on our risk level. And honestly, for a six-year-old, it's pretty simple to wear the mask. He doesn't really seem to mind it at all. So we're okay with it. I'm excited for the news, you know, from Pfizer coming out that they're able to drop the age down, that we're seeing, you know, more progress in getting kids vaccinated. But we really are at a little bit of a standstill in the state, and it's not really great numbers overall. So we still have people who need to get vaccinated. I'm grateful that we're looking at ways to make it easier. You don't need appointments anymore. There are lots of pop-up events happening closer to people's homes. But if we're going to get to herd immunity, we need greater numbers, in large part because also we have such a young state.
One of the problems about being in the political middle is that I get left out of the conversation so much. And I'm just going to say what's happening in the Gochner household. And
I was going to ask you. I was going to ask Natalie, like, what's the Gochner household?
The way I want to frame it is, you know, I have two children and I think they both lean left of center. My husband leans left of center. So I sit here alone, right of center. And I have to, they keep saying, what's going on in your party? Or what about this? And you know, what they're upset about is that the Weber County GOP censured Mitt Romney on Saturday. Oh. And I always turn to him and I say, you know, that's not the Republican Party that I know, because they're not talking about fiscal restraint and free enterprise and strong national defense, federalism. They're just talking about the Donald and they're censuring Mitt Romney. But what did you make of that, Dan? And I have to just say, we have a governor that wrote an op-ed to the Deseret News post-convention, and his last line is, let's rebuild the Republican Party. So, it's not just the Gochner household.
No, that's fair. And I would say the governor's right. It is time to rebuild the Republican Party. But just like every rebuild, there's always like the recalcitrant, folks who just refuse to like allow you. They're not going to grab a 2x4 until like the house is completely gone. That's fine. What I'll tell you is there is a lot of rebuilding going on. There's a lot of positive direction. All the things you said about the Republican Party, Natalie, they were all discussed at the conventions. They were all part of the reports and they were great conversations. Unfortunately, like every, bad family event, if you got a really rude uncle that shows up to the party, everybody wants to talk about the rude uncle, but everybody else had a great time.
Shireen, I heard this from a lot of Republicans that were at the convention, that it wasn't as bad as the media made it look.
I mean, I'm concerned that somebody was elected to leadership who participated in the January 6th situation at our Capitol. There's a lot to be said about, people's character and what they decide to do with themselves when it comes to political action. I don't think it's a good sign.
No way. Participated. Oh, gosh, Shireen. You participated in the BLM riots just because you lived in Salt Lake. At the end of the day, you didn't. And the secretary was there. She didn't participate. That's a totally different story. Be careful.
Oh, she was just hanging out?
Be okay. Careful.
Hey, we've only got about 30 seconds in the program. Shireen, you want to send a good vibe to our listeners and they'll have the same of Dan?
Yes. So I would just say that I feel like we're getting into a space where, you know, we've got the warmer weather. Get outside if you can. We've got beautiful lilacs are blooming, and that's my favorite flower.
I love it. Dan?
I will say it's about time that we're getting some good weather, some good news on COVID, and I'm really excited for next week when we talk about how the Republicans were right and the Democrats were not. It's going to be great.
That's a wrap. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center with Shireen Gorbani and Dan McKay. Program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for your interest.